I cannot hear Psalm 84, that beginning of Psalm 84, which Charles read so beautifully for us today. How lovely are your dwelling places. I can't hear that without recalling one of my very fondest college memories. I went to a rather unusual undergraduate school. I went to music school, as many of you know. Studied to be a music teacher and singer. But I went to Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey, and as its name implies, the focus of the entire curriculum was on choral singing and choral music. Even if you were a soloist or an instrumentalist of some sort, everyone sang in the choir all the time. The freshman class was the chapel choir. The sophomore class, the oratorio choir, the junior, senior classes, and the grad students were the symphonic choir, because Westminster Choir happened to have the privilege of being the house choir for the New York Philharmonic, which, as an undergrad student, gave me the enormous privilege of singing in Carnegie Hall amidst hundreds of other people, of course, but I sang in Carnegie Hall, as well as some other wonderful places with wonderful conductors. I had the privilege as a young man to sing some of the great choral works by Schütz and Bach and Haydn, Beethoven, Mahler. Things that one only hears when you get to have an orchestra and a big chorus all together. And I remember one of the most memorable performances was with the Philadelphia Orchestra under Riccardo Muti, and we performed Johannes Brahms' A German Requiem. And if you know Brahms' Requiem, you might recall it is rather long. It's about an hour and a half, so that's the only thing on the program. It's seven movements. And midway through, it says seven movements, it's not a Catholic Mass in that it doesn't have the text of the Catholic Mass in Latin. These are excerpts in German from the Bible. It's a different Mass. And the fourth movement out of seven, a little bit past halfway through, is the setting of this psalm. Wie lieblich sind deine Wohnungen. How lovely is your dwelling place. And when, with the orchestra and the choir singing and playing together, it seemed as though the instruments and the voices sort of peeled away that veil and glimpsed heaven. I guess this is why we call it romantic music in that period, in the mid-19th century. Wie lieblich deine Wohnungen. And it's seconds before the end of that movement, which really only lasts about 5 minutes. We get to glimpse that glory for only about 5 minutes. Seconds before the end of that movement comes my favorite moment, where first the sopranos and then the altos and then the other voices briefly sing, well, let's see how I can manage this without the Philadelphia Orchestra. Wie lieblich, and then, wie lieblich, it's much better with the orchestra, wie lieblich, okay, so, yeah, you can cut that out of the sermon recording. That does not need to be preserved for posterity. But the point is this, those first couple of phrases in only a few measures, the genius of Brahms had this way of just in a few measures doing this thing that only music can do, because it is the shape of our emotion as well. It anticipates, it has this sort of yearning, this reaching, wie lieblich, and then it finds its rest, wie lieblich. It finds its home as it resolves. The music, for a moment at least, allows us to dwell in that rest and presence. Wie lieblich deine Wohnungen. Welcome to Homecoming Sunday at MCC Portland. This Sunday after Labor Day, we and many other churches, as summer vacations draw to a close, as people return to their usual routines, as folks return to school, we extend on Homecoming Sunday a special invitation for friends and family to join us, and folks who may not have been with us for a while to come back and join us for a spell. Return to sharing your Sundays with us at MCC Portland. In a sincere hope that folks might find some sense of spiritual home here with this community in this place. That first reading, which we heard by Frederick Buechner, is so beautiful. As I was hearing it read aloud so wonderfully by Zach, I said, well, I probably needn't preach a sermon, but because I wrote one, I guess I will. But it is so beautifully written, and he captures this notion of home. I think in some ways a romantic notion of home. He alludes to the fact that there is ambivalence around that for many of us. He does recognize in passing that many have never, either growing up or even now, have a place, a home, where there is peace or safety, or in his words, charity and welcome. Which makes this reality of a, quote, search for home really tenuous and all the more compelling. The existence of something someone can call home is, of course, a precondition of homecoming. We presuppose that something like home can exist. So what might that actually mean for us in spiritual terms as people of faith? So I'm going to take just a few minutes and share some things I'm thinking about around that on this Homecoming Sunday. This Psalm 84, with all of its beautiful language and imagery, it celebrates the loveliness of God's dwelling place. How lovely God's dwelling place is. But we should pause and notice that the psalmist was not just being poetic, he had a very particular place in mind when he was writing. The dwelling place, the specific dwelling place of which he writes, that he celebrates, wasn't some eternal heaven beyond the clouds or some lovely setting in nature. At the time, the psalmist was writing in reference to the Jerusalem temple in Zion, a physical place whose reality and existence and its beauty, its appearance, was an inspiration not because it was metaphorical or an icon that referred to something else, but it was in some ways the place where it was believed heaven and earth met, in that spot. God may be the invisible God of the whole universe, but that's the place where this still invisible God had taken up residence. Now, before we are tempted to dismiss too hastily that as a quaint or antiquated spiritual idea, I want you to pause for a moment and recall, are there not physical places where the spirit just feels more present? That it is heavier with spirit or livelier with spirit. You know, the ancient Celts called those places thin places. It's where the separating veil between the physical reality and the spiritual reality, where that separating veil became so thin that it was permeable. So to proclaim that the holy presence of God can dwell in a place is not a claim that that's the only place where God is found, but that is a place where the Spirit of God can be sensed and known. So I think Psalm 84 is for us just one snapshot of what home could look like, even spiritual home could look like. It may be a place that you can find on a map, that you can visit from time to time. If we're lucky, it may be findable at the corner of Broadway and 24th in Northeast Portland. But that's not the only picture of home that we get. You know, generations before there was a temple in Jerusalem, and before the era of the psalms that were sung in procession to worship at the temple or rang out in the temple's courtyards, there were generations of the Exodus, that release of the Jews from their slavery in Egypt, and those 40 years of wandering in the wilderness before they entered the promised land. During those years, where was home then? Where is it that God dwelt? In the ancient world, you know, most deities were thought to be local. This was the local god or goddess, with the exception of those gods and goddesses of natural phenomena and forces. Most were believed to be linked to a geographic place, to this mountain, to this village, to this country, perhaps. So when you went to another place, most commonly you were expected to reverence the local deity because they were the deity in charge of the place where you were, and you were not expected to bring your own along with you. Or if you did, it was just a reminder, in a way. One of the lesser noticed, but I think extraordinary things about the story of the Exodus that we have in the Bible is that they credited the God of their ancestors, people who came from a different place, who weren't from Egypt. They credited a foreign god from a different location for come to Egypt to free them. And then not only did that god come from somewhere else and deliver them, but that same holy presence went with them everywhere they wandered for 40 years. A pillar of cloud by day, a pillar of fire at night, then in a portable ark in a tent that would be taken down and set up wherever they moved. God didn't live in a geographic place that you had to go to on a pilgrimage to visit, but God went with them everywhere that they went. You know, it kind of makes me think of when I pull up the map function on my Android device, my smartphone, which is smarter than I am, unfortunately, far too often. But I pull up the map, and if I pause for a few seconds, there will be this little blue arrow that tells me exactly where I am. And that blue arrow moves with me, if it's working, everywhere that I go. It's kind of like that arrow. It moves with us wherever we are. Yeah, you can find it on a map, but you are everywhere. You are anywhere and everywhere that is. So in a way, it doesn't seem surprising to me that after all of that wandering about, even in a spectacular temple, even that kind of house wouldn't be a permanent home. So where is it that God dwells? Where's God's home? In the Gospel according to John, chapter 14, we have an extended portion of Jesus speaking and praying with his disciples on his final night, his last meal before his arrest. And after he says that he will at least be visibly gone for a time, the Spirit was going to be coming and would then reveal all things to them. So one of the disciples asks, well, how will you be revealed? And Jesus responds, those who love me and keep my word, God will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. We will come to them and make our home with them. This is not a God in a temple. This is not a God in a tent. This is a God who will come and make a home within us. Homecoming isn't just about us. In that case, we will make our home with them. Homecoming is about God coming home in us. Our yes becoming the place where God has promised to dwell with us. Two years ago, I went back to my childhood home in Western Pennsylvania. It was the house that was built the year before I was born. So the only house that I grew up in, and it was still our family home. My mother had ultimately reached the decision it was time to sell that house and relocate to a really great retirement community in San Diego. So my two sisters and I returned and helped her get ready to close up the house, which, as you can well imagine, was a bittersweet time. Loved being around my mom and my sisters and seeing other family members still in Western Pennsylvania, and also beginning to say goodbye to this house that was the only place I still had that childhood thought of home. I was one of the fortunate ones that had a safe and secure home. But as hard as it was saying goodbye to the house, the hardest piece of all was saying goodbye to the woods, which is behind my childhood home. And I've on occasion spoken about the meaning of that small forest. As I was growing up, it was probably the place where I spent my greatest amount of time reflecting and even connecting with God. It was one of the places where I struggled to figure out who I was. I would wander through that woods, and I knew I was safe, and I knew that the woods was friendly. I knew every tree and plant and small animal that scurried around in it. So those days that I spent helping close up the house, I delayed all week going for what would be my final walk in the woods behind my childhood home. Avoidance. Yes, that's what it's called. But I did the morning before I left. And it was really one of the hardest things that I ever had to do, in some ways unexpectedly, walk through that woods and weep with the knowledge that even if I ever returned, I would have to ask someone's permission if I could walk in that woods. And I spent quite a length of time being a real tree hugger, because that was the only way I was going to stay upright while I was crying. Now, I know that every time I've been back to that woods, it has been different than it was in my memory. Because, you know, it's one of those places when you have a meditation and they ask you to go to the place where you feel safe, visualize, what if it's at a beach, if it's the ocean, if it's a place, that is the place. That is the woods. If I had the gift of painting, I could paint you the picture of how that woods is in my soul. I know in some ways that I will never again be able to walk those woods in a way that they will be my home now as a 51-year-old man. I have pictures that kind of hint at what it looks like, but I know it is as it always has been in me. It will always be in me. I can close my eyes and I'm immediately there. I love the words, the last words of that excerpt we heard from Buechner. The first home foreshadows the final hallows and fulfills what was precious in the first. The first foreshadows the future, the final hallows and fulfills the first. Now, upon reading that first, it does seem that he's more than implying this heavenly resting place, this heavenly home and destination. But I think we need not wait until death to come to our final resting place, our final home. Our final home is not in the hereafter. It is available in the here and the now. You know, in a particularly poetic and insightful moment, St. Augustine prayed these words: "Our hearts are restless till they find their rest in thee. Our hearts are restless till they find their rest in thee. Our true and our final home is and has always been in and with God. We will always be spiritually homeless till we find our rest in God. Does that also mean, might we always be at home when we found our rest in God? Home suddenly becomes nowhere and everywhere all at once. Our true home, therefore, our true homecoming can never be fulfilled in a singular time, even though we mark it on the calendar, or in a single place that's findable on a map. A temple, a tent, a forest, MCC Portland on those times when we might get it right. At best, any of those provide us a glimpse, a hint, an intuition, maybe a way to practice living for our true home. Our true home, our true homecoming, the everlasting home with God.